Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. As the drought worsens, a new report out by the California Department of Water Resources reveals that groundwater levels across California have historically low water levels. Half of the 5,400 wells studied had shrunk to levels lower than seen in the last 100 years. The analysis looked at thousands of wells across the state based on data submitted by well drillers and some well owners, the Sacramento Bee reports. This is hurting farmers, especially in the San Joaquin Valley, where some wells are over 100 feet below normal. Across the state and right here in East County, some wells have gone completely dry, and it's not even summertime yet. East County Magazine's own publisher, who lives in Lakeside, had his well run dry just this week. Some property owners are drilling deeper, and this places added strain on groundwater supplies. Locally, residents in rural areas have voiced fears that major energy projects planned could deplete their aquifers completely, the water sources that they rely on for drinking water for themselves as well as for their livestock. California is one of the few states that does not regulate how much well water owners can pump, the Sacramento Bee reports. In 2009, new state legislation did require well owners to regularly report groundwater elevation but not pumping rates, or risk losing eligibility for state water grants. But compliance has been very spotty, with most of them failing to file those required reports. If the drought continues, it bodes ominously for rural residents who are reliant on groundwater supplies. Statewide, groundwater provides a third of all of California's water needs. But during drought years, when water levels of rivers and lakes drop, Californians rely on groundwater to meet 60% of our water needs. The study points up the need for better management of groundwater resources, concluded the state's water resources director.
This is Leon Thompson with a report on the latest of several fires to scorch East County neighborhoods in the past few days. A brush fire along State Route 125 near Hamishaw Boulevard in Spring Valley led to evacuations of several homes near Sweetwater Reservoir on Thursday afternoon. The blaze charred about 2 acres and scorched a shed before firefighters from various fire departments, including Monte Vista Fire, brought it under control with the help of a water-dropping helicopter. Animal control was called in to assist with rounding up pigs behind one of the homes, a witness stated. An area resident told East County Magazine the fire began near a homeless camp, though the cause of the fire has not yet been determined. The Brush Fire Party Line on Facebook posted this message of gratitude for firefighters. Great job, Monte Vista. At least 10 homes were saved.
High winds roared across East County this week, causing havoc across the region. The winds downed trees, fanned several brush fires, and caused power outages of up to 24 hours in some areas, including Descanso. An SDG&E spokesman told East County Magazine that the outages were weather-related, but none were intentional shutoffs. KNSJ Radio's transmitter was also knocked off the air by these unusually strong winds. And in Buckman Springs, motorists were trapped in their car by a fallen tree limb and had to be rescued. In Campo, one listener reports she was trapped in her home by a heavy limb that fell across her front door. And at Lindbergh Field, airplanes had trouble landing due to high winds. Meanwhile, at Mission Bay, some windsurfers had the ride of their lives. So just how windy was it? On April 30th, wind gusts of 101 mile per hour were recorded at Sill Hill near Cuyamaca. That's hurricane force wind speeds. Fremont Canyon had 94 mile an hour winds, and in Buckman Springs, the wind clocked in at 87 miles an hour. In Crestwood and Santa Isabel, winds of 75 to 76 miles an hour were recorded. Alpine and Boulder Creek both had 72 mile an hour gusts, and in Descanso, where our transmitter's located, 70 mile an hour winds led to the prolonged power outages there. Sunrise Highway, La Posta, and the Ahas Grade all had winds recorded at 69 miles per hour. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ here in windy East County, this is Miriam Raftery.
Where you live in San Diego, affects how quickly emergency response teams can bring help to you when you need it. According to a report just issued by the 2013-2014 San Diego County Grand Jury, the report identifies five areas in the city which experience the longest emergency response times: Home Avenue in City Heights, Paradise Hills, the College Area, Skyline, and Encanto. The lag in response time is the net result of decades of delay in building new fire stations as the city grew from a relatively small town to a major metropolitan area, and by the city's contract with its ambulance provider, Rural Metro. The contract requires Rural Metro to respond to all 911 calls without assessing the nature of the emergency. Only about 15% of the incoming 911 calls are real emergencies. The grand jury recommends that the city develop a better protocol for screening emergency calls to separate the serious emergencies from those of a trivial nature. The city should also modify its contract with Rural Metro to allow more flexibility in its responses to the calls. In addition, training citizens living in the area with slow response times in the use of CPR and placing automatic external defibrillators in many easily accessible public venues would improve outcomes for those in need of a medical intervention in those areas. This could be done by the city alone or in collaboration with nonprofit organizations such as the American Red Cross or the American Heart Association, as well as local community colleges offering nursing and other medical training. The report looked only at the city, not the unincorporated areas of the county or other cities within the region. East County Magazine has learned that the average response time in rural areas is 10.5 minutes, though some responses have taken hours. The complete report can be found on the grand jury's website at www.sdcounty.ca.gov/grand jury. This is Leon Thompson reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ.
Ratepayers are feeling the pinch from higher utility bills due to rate hikes recently approved by the California Utilities Commission. But Sempra Energy, SDG&E's parent corporation, isn't suffering. In fact, Sempra's profits soared during the first quarter of this year, with earnings up 39% over the same period last year. The company reaped $247 million in earnings, including $69 million in profits, of which $32 million is due to those rate hikes paid by customers of Southern California Gas, which Sempra owns. SDG&E also reported a 9% hike, raking in $99 million. Profits would have been even higher if not for the shutdown of San Onofre, although the utilities, including Sempra Energy, seek to persuade state regulators to allow them to recover costs of replacement power, which could force ratepayers to pay even higher bills. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Deputies from the Santee Sheriff Substation saved the life of a man who sought to jump off the Greenfield Drive Bridge over State Route 67. Deputies responded to a call shortly after 5:30 p.m. on Wednesday, finding the man standing near the edge of the overpass. Deputies requested that the highway be shut down and engaged the man in conversation. They learned he was upset and wanted to kill himself by jumping off the bridge. The officers succeeded in persuading the man to come down safely, and he was transported to a hospital for evaluation.
Beachgoers, beware! On April 30th, two children playing barefoot at Bonita Cove on Mission Bay stepped on razor blades and injured their feet. Police officers used metal detectors to find an additional 19 razor blades buried sharp side up near playground equipment in the park on Mariner's Way near West Mission Bay Drive. The two boys were treated by paramedics. This was not the first time that razor blades have been found nearby. Last August, 8 blades were found near a playground at the same park after a woman cut her foot while walking in grass. In September, 20 more razor blades were discovered in a park across the street. There was a fourth incident, 10 News reports. Police are checking for DNA on the blades and will also examine surveillance cameras in the vicinity, 10 News reports. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Arielle Johansson.
A bill moving through the state legislature would allow communities to have more input when a sexually violent predator is released from prison. Assemblyman Steve Fox says his bill would make the conditional release of these offenders more transparent.
AB 1607 is a practical bill that allows any county alleged to be the county of domicile to be given notice and an opportunity to participate in the proceedings.
Current law requires a sexually violent predator who earns conditional release to be sent back to the county where they once lived. This bill would require counties be given notice and an opportunity to be heard in court prior to determining the location where the offender will be required to live. Fox says his bill is in response to the case of Christopher Hubbard, the so-called pillowcase rapist, who was treated in Santa Clara County but then sent to Los Angeles County without any notice. Fox says Hubbard hadn't lived in Los Angeles County in over 40 years.
The judge in this case has made the decision to dump this offender into my district, not once, but twice.
The bill received unanimous support from the Assembly Public Safety Committee and now moves to the Assembly floor for consideration as early as next week. This is Lori Abbott, California News Service.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on some local political races that are heating up. Soon, voters will be judging the judges in the June election. Now, often it's difficult for voters to find information on judicial candidates who are prohibited from discussing legal issues that might come before them as judges. So the San Diego County Bar Association's Judicial Elections Evaluation Committee has issued ratings for judicial candidates in five contested races. The ratings rank three of those candidates as lacking qualifications. They are Ken Gosselin, Michelle Hagan, and Douglas Crawford. Now, two of those have already been embroiled in controversy. Gosselin was required by a court to change claims made on his ballot statement regarding his experience and education that a judge found to be misleading. Crawford is facing suspension of his law license due to passing along a threat made by a client to initiate an IRS audit of an opposing party in a lawsuit. He is appealing that suspension. The third candidate who received the lacking qualifications rating, Michelle Hagan, appears to have an extensive resume. The bar does consider other factors, however, such as judicial temperament and fairness, but the bar did not respond to our inquiry as to its specific reason for her ranking. The committee is comprised of 21 attorneys and retired judges who represent a cross-section of the legal community by gender and ethnicity and political affiliation, including lawyers from the public and private sectors, civil and criminal law practitioners, corporate counsel, sole practitioners, and members of small, medium, and large-size law firms. The Bar's Judicial Elections Evaluation Committee gives its rankings based on rankings of well-qualified, qualified, and lacking qualifications. Two races, seats 25 and 44, actually have no candidates who received a well-qualified rating. The ratings are, in seat 9, Douglas Crawford, lacking qualifications. Ronald Prager, the incumbent judge of the Superior Court, well qualified. In seat 19, the incumbent, Michael Popkins, got a well qualified rating, while Paul Ware, the challenger and Justice Department attorney, got a qualified rating. In seat 20, incumbent Judge Lisa Shaw was rated well qualified, while her challenger, federal prosecutor Carla Keene, got a qualified rating. In seat 25, which is an open seat, Deputy Attorney General Brad Weinrib was rated qualified, while Michelle Hagan and Ken Gosselin both got lacking qualification ratings. In seat 44, both candidates received qualified ratings. They are the incumbent judge, Jacqueline Stern, and challenger, Attorney Joseph Adelizzi.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at the San Diego Performance Academy. And I'm back today with John Valencia and Lori Corbin from the Foundation for Cuyamaca and Grossmont College. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Now, I understand that you have a very exciting film premiere coming up. Please tell us about that.
Of course. We have been making a music video since January and filming everyone and anyone in East County to be a part of this video. And we will be premiering it on May 10th at Grossmont College from 10:30 to 1:30 at our big Family Fun Day, which is open to the entire community, and it's free.
Fantastic. Now, what's the name of the video?
The video is Give the Dream. It supports our program that we have at our colleges, which allows emergency funding grants up to $500 for students.
Right. Lori, I understand that these are really a big help to students. Can you give us an example or two?
It is. Well, many of the students that are enrolled at our colleges have dreams, and their dreams will be enabled by obtaining a college education. And some of them have challenges, financial challenges particularly, right, that can get in the way of them completing their education. And they come to us because this program is unique. It can help with if you're behind on your rent or your utilities, you have a medical expense, you need glasses, your car needs to be repaired so you can get to school. They can come to us and apply to receive this type of financial assistance. And the students that have received this are so grateful, because they didn't know where to turn, and they were going to have to drop out of school without this funding.
Very good. So the Give the Dream movie is to launch, I understand, a six-week fundraising campaign to raise money for the Give the Dream fund to help these students in need at our local community colleges. Now, how many people locally were in this video, John, about?
Hundreds, maybe upwards to over about 600 different people.
Yeah, some community leaders, well-known folks out there.
Oh, you name it.
You should see it just to see who you might know might be in it.
That's right.
Yeah, it was also open to the public, and they had a big filming at Grossmont Center a couple of weeks ago. So if you come out and see the movie, folks, you just might see yourself or some of the friends that you know in it.
That's correct.
Tell us again where they can see the movie.
So the music video premiere is Saturday, May 10th, and that launches the six-week campaign. Mm-hmm. And you can see the video on our website at givethedream.net.
Or you can come see it in the theater on the big screen.
That's right. Either way,
Grossmont College. On May 10th. Very good. And where can people get more information about helping the foundation or the video or any of the things we've talked about?
You can go to givethedream.net as well, and that will push you either to our actual website, which is foundation.gccd.edu, or givethedream.net.
Well, very
that one's easier.
Very good. I'm a graduate of the Grossmont Cuyamaca College District myself, as is my daughter. So I wish you all the best.
And we hope to see you there.
I look forward to coming out and seeing the movie.
It'll be a lot of fun.
There you go. Thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. In this week's Destination East County program, we'll be walking all over East County with scenic views and wildflowers and hanging out in the Wild West. Today, we have reporter Leon Thompson joining us.
Howdy.
The Ramona Bluegrass and Old West Fest is coming up on Saturday, May 3rd and Sunday, May 4th. This two-day local East County festival has a lineup of musicians performing on the Old West stage, a Civil War era camp, a saloon, mountain men, a prairie schooner, and cowboys. Visitors will be able to tour the camps and learn about how life was lived in the 1700s to 1800s. Visitors can also enjoy two full days of bluegrass and old-fashioned cowboy music, along with jam sessions and workshops for children, all at the Ramona Bluegrass and Old West Festival.
On the other side of East County, there will be Wild West gunfights, ranch branding, mutton busting, and horseshoe tournament taking place out at Campo Lake Marina Roundup on Saturday, May 3rd, presented by the Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility. Other activities during the all-day roundup include the Miss Roundup pageant, kids' games, country music, an antique tractor display, a reenactment of the famous Campo gunfight at high noon, merchandise and food vendors, a stick horse competition, and Gymkhana. Gates open at 7 a.m. with opening ceremonies at 10 a.m.
The annual Spring Garden Festival will be celebrated at Cuyamaca College on Saturday, May 3rd from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. This free, family-friendly community festival will feature demonstrations on community farming topics, the Cuyamaca College Nursery's biggest plant sale of the year, the Rancho San Diego Farmers Market, a fashion show called Fashion in Bloom, and much, much more. This is the 21st year of the festival, and the demonstrations aim to help one become a better gardener and learn how to conserve our precious resources. Visitors can also tour the Heritage of the Americas Museum and the Water Conservation Garden, both located on the campus near the nursery and farmers market.
The 17th annual Sage and Songbirds Festival and Garden Tour will be held in Alpine. Two separate events. The garden tour will be held throughout the weekend on Friday, May 3rd through Sunday, May 4th. The garden tour includes five private home gardens, a public habitat garden, and a plant sale open to the public, and a tour of the Sky Hunters Birds of Prey Rehabilitation Facility. And the second event is the festival that takes place one day only on Saturday, May 3rd, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the Alpine Creek Town Center on Tavern Road in Alpine. Free admission includes a butterfly release, birds of prey and hummingbirds, snakes, lizards, and spiders, educational seminars, arts and craft vendors.
Seroptimist International of Lemon Grove presents their Spring Craft Fair on Saturday, May 3rd from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. at the Lemon Grove Academy Auditorium in Lemon Grove. The fair features plenty of original and handmade gifts.
On Saturday and Sunday, May 3rd and 4th, a unique modern version of Jungle Book by Rudyard Kipling will be presented at the SDSU Don Powell Theater on the campus of San Diego State University.
Providing a wine experience in the country, the 24th annual Vintage Alpine is taking place on Sunday, May 4th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Summers Past Farms on Old Highway 80 in Alpine.
A ranger-led hike on Saturday, May 3rd from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. at Louis Stelzer Park on Wildcat Canyon Road takes participants down an easy-to-moderate hike on an unpaved yet maintained trail. Hikers will travel along an open hillside with views of Stelzer Ridge and Wildcat Canyon, and then return through the shaded oak and sycamore-lined trail alongside Stelzer Creek. Hikers can meet at the ranger station wearing appropriate shoes and with sunscreen, a hat, and drinking water. The hike will be canceled in the event of rain.
A wildflower walk through the Sycamore Canyon Gooden Ranch Preserve in Poway will be held on Sunday, May 4th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. This walk, led by Ranger Maureen, will teach visitors all about the different and unique and amazing plants they have throughout the park, how they all interact with each other, and how everything is connected. Participants can meet at the Highway 67 staging area.
On Sunday, May 4th, a spring hike will be held in Santa Isabel from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Those interested can join Ranger Bobby on a hike around the Kanaka Loop Trail alongside the Santa Isabel Creek, viewing wildflowers and discussing the history of the area. Hikers can also learn about cattle and how they help maintain the diversity of plant life. It is suggested that hikers meet at the park kiosk, wear appropriate hiking attire, and bring plenty of water. Dogs are welcome, but must be leashed. This hike is open to all ages. Inclement weather cancels the event.
This year marks the century milestone of the founding of Akumba Hot Springs. Although the community of Akumba was settled in the middle 1800s, the first time the community appeared in an official document as Akumba Hot Springs was in a State of California Railroad Commission document dated 1914. Four major festivals are planned for the centennial, including the third annual Blues Festival on Saturday, May 3rd from 12 noon until 6:30 p.m., and takes place at the Highland Center on Old Highway 80 in Akumba and Boulevard. Guests are invited to attend the event, celebrate, and enjoy Akumba's scenic backcountry location. There will also be crafters at the event and, of course, a lineup of music with a variety of talented musicians. There will be pulled pork sandwiches, hot dogs, water, and soft drinks available for sale. The Akumba Women's Club will be selling baked goods.
Annie the Musical will be performed this Friday and Saturday, May 3rd and 4th, at the Joan Crock Theater on University Avenue, presented by Mount Helix Academy.
There's a patio party blues jam each Sunday afternoon at Downtown Cafe on Main Street in El Cajon, with musicians Chet Cannon and the committee. The party starts on Sunday at 3:30 p.m. and goes till 6:30 p.m.
El Cajon Valley High School is holding their fundraiser for the athletic department on Saturday, May 3rd at the Cottonwood Golf Club with a shotgun start at 8 a.m.
Now for a preview of upcoming events in East County. Early next week on Tuesday, May 6th at 6:30 p.m., the musical group Willa Mammoth will perform at the Rancho San Diego Branch Library as part of the San Diego Acoustic Showcase Series. Willa Mammoth entertains audiences with a mix of folk, country, Americana, and soul.
Celebrating literature in the city of La Mesa, the San Diego County Library is hosting Authors and Artists, a free and informative event from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 10th. Featured will be local authors and artists, book signings and sales, local artwork sales, and food trucks.
Julian Woman's Club will be holding their Wildflower Show from May 7th through 10th. Members of the Julian Woman's Club gather wildflowers from all areas in and around Julian, including high mountain, desert, oak and pine forest, chaparral, and high desert.
Cottonwood Golf Club is hosting a Mother's Day brunch in the Pavilion and Spring Gardens on Sunday, May 11th from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Okumba Hot Springs is the site of an historical walk on Saturday, May 10th at 10 a.m., hosted by the Okumba Boulevard Revitalization Alliance. This fundraiser is limited to 25 people, and reservations need to be made by May 8th. That's all for this week. All of these events and more can be found on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
Destination East County is supported by our listeners and with a community enhancement grant from San Diego County.
See you around, East County.
This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Next up, East County Magazine has partnered with Public News Service to bring you some of the most important news in the public interest happening across the nation.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for Friday, May the 2nd, 2014. I'm Mike Clifford. Nine stories featured on our Friday rundown, including the call to suspend Oklahoma executions is having ripple effects in other states, a sneak preview of this weekend's global cannabis march, and Native American tribal leaders touring a potential national monument in New Mexico. Now our top story, details are still emerging about what's being called a botched lethal injection in Oklahoma this week. The LA Times reports the head of Oklahoma's prisons Thursday called for a suspension to all executions until the state's capital punishment policies can be reviewed. Meantime, our Stephanie Carson reports from North Carolina how the controversy might impact how and if executions are carried out in that state.
While North Carolina is thousands of miles away, people on both sides of the death penalty debate are keeping a close eye on developments, since several lawmakers in this state have declared their intention to restart executions after an 8-year standstill. Duke University law professor Jim Coleman believes their intentions don't match the will of the people.
I think North Carolina has been fine in the 8 years that we've not had executions, and I don't think trying to resume them, particularly in light of what happened in Oklahoma, is anything that the public wants any part of.
Death sentences have been on the decline in North Carolina in recent years, and questions about evidence collected in the state crime lab, as well as racial issues surrounding sentencing, have prompted some to question whether the punishment should continue. This is Stephanie Carson reporting.
According to a newly released timeline, the Oklahoma inmate involved in the execution this week, Clayton Lockett, lived for 43 minutes after the first injection was administered. A bill moving through California's legislature would allow communities to have more input when sexually violent predators are released from prison. Lori Abbott has the story.
Assemblyman Steve Fox says his bill would make the conditional release of these offenders more transparent.
That allows any county alleged to be the county of domicile to be given notice and an opportunity to participate in the proceedings.
Current law requires a violent sexual predator who earns conditional release be sent back to the county where they last lived. This bill would require counties be given notice and an opportunity to be heard in court prior to determining the location where the offender will be required to live.
Lori tells us that bill received unanimous support from the Assembly's Public Safety Committee and now moves to the Assembly floor for consideration as early as next week. Idaho students are being pushed to attend college, but Deborah Smith has been digging into a new report that finds the state's message doesn't walk the talk when it comes to how higher education is funded.
The study shows Idaho has cut state spending per student by nearly 37% since 2008. Only five other states have gone that far. Lauren Necachea with Idaho Kids Count says the result is that tuition and fees rise. They're up more than 28% during that same time frame.
We should be looking for ways to make college more affordable for students and their families. And unfortunately, we're moving in the opposite direction.
Alabama, Oregon, South Carolina, Louisiana, and Arizona have cut more deeply than Idaho. Alaska and North Dakota have increased higher ed funding per student.
Hundreds of schools across Missouri will be able to help ensure their students don't go hungry thanks to a successful federal program which is coming to the state. More on the story from Mona Shand.
The community eligibility provision means that once approved, schools where at least 40% of the kids already have qualified for free meals will be able to offer those meals to all students without additional applications or paperwork. Jeanette Mott Oxford is the executive director of the Missouri Association for Social Welfare.
If in a district that has that high of a poverty rate, we just feed everybody. It saves a lot of money and makes more money available for food so that we get the biggest bang for our buck.
The program was rolled out in 11 states last year, resulting in a sizable increase in the number of kids participating in school meals. Missouri schools have until June 30th to sign up for the program.
The L.A. Clippers' Donald Sterling controversy claimed another casualty Thursday as Leon Jenkins resigned as president of the L.A. chapter of the NAACP. After word got out, the chapter was planning to give Sterling a humanitarian award. The Washington Post reports critics say because of Sterling's large donations to local charities, including the NAACP, his checkered history on racial issues was overlooked. That same chapter gave Sterling a Lifetime Achievement Award in 2009. Nurses in Berkeley and in Hazard, Kentucky say they hope a new contract will ease what they've called brutal workloads that are dangerous to patients. Dan Hyman has the details.
Nurses at Appalachian Regional Healthcare called off a one-day strike that had been planned for Thursday. Beckley ICU RN Tara Neal says she hasn't seen the details of a last-minute contract reached with the help of federal mediation. She says it looks like they won progress on their biggest issue. Staffing so short, it often meant 14 to 16-hour shifts.
The most important thing for the nurses was to have a staff that could adequately care for our patients.
A press release from Appalachian Regional hailed the tentative agreement as having the best interests of the hospitals, the nurses, and the communities in mind.
And this weekend, folks in Ohio will be joining a global movement to build support for marijuana policy reform. Mary Sherman gives us this preview.
Dozens will make their way around the Justice Center in Cleveland for the 2014 Global Cannabis March. Rob Ryan, president of the group Ohio Normal, the national organization to reform marijuana laws, says support is growing for legalizing marijuana. He cites a 2009 Ohio poll from the University of Cincinnati that said even 5 years ago, 73% of Ohio adults favored allowing medical marijuana use.
Quinnipiac released a poll and it jumped up
since that time to 87%, and more than 50% of Ohioans support just outright legalization. As I say, marijuana legalization is going to happen, so just deal with it.
The proposed Ohio Cannabis Rights Amendment would create a state panel to license, regulate, and control medical marijuana use.
Finally, several of New Mexico's Native American tribal leaders are touring historic sites today at the Oregon Mountains Desert Peaks, which Troy Wild reports President Obama is considering designating as a national monument.
Isleta del Sur Tribal Councilmember Rafael Gomez, among those on the tour, says there are petroglyph drawings in the region that chronicle centuries of Native American life.
There's pictures of the wildlife that used to exist back then, pictures of serpents, and there's pictures of directions. You're talking about a people what knew all how to use the stars.
New Mexico's Pueblo Council of Governors endorsed the proposed national monument in a joint resolution, citing the spiritual and historic resources in the region and their enduring impact on Native American culture. I'm Troy Wild.
Troy says Gomez expects many businesses in the Las Cruces area also to support the national monument designation because they believe it will boost the local economy with added tourism. I'm Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, and online at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report on how senior volunteers are helping keep communities safer and saving the county money. Ordinary citizens serving as senior volunteer patrol members are providing over $10 million worth of support services each year to law enforcement agencies in San Diego County. In an era of tight budgets, this is a significant asset to the community, according to a San Diego County grand jury report released this week. The grand jury recommends continuing and possibly expanding the senior volunteer programs. Law enforcement agencies, under the direction of the Sheriff's Department and seven county municipal police departments, utilize the volunteer patrols to perform law enforcement-related tasks that do not require a sworn officer. These include assisting police agencies with traffic control, transportation of evidence, contacting homebound citizens to make sure they're safe, and issuing citations for fire lane and handicap parking violations. In addition, senior volunteer patrol members patrolling their communities in marked law enforcement vehicles do provide an additional police presence in the community at virtually no cost. The complete report can be found on the grand jury's website at www.sdcounty.ca.gov/grandjury.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a report on solar roadways. In 2012, we reported on a potentially promising new technology to build roadways out of glass panels capable of producing solar power. Now, Scott Broussard at the Solar Roadways newsletter has provided an update on a prototype parking lot that has now been installed. Photos show the hexagonal-shaped green-tinted panels just outside the inventor's lab. The design has been tested in university engineering labs for traction, strength, and toughness. Broussard states the results were far beyond our wildest hopes. Installing the solar parking lot during a cold Idaho winter has also provided a chance to test out heaters that melt snow and ice off the panels, which were warm and dry to the touch. According to Broussard, we're collecting solar energy from the parking lot, and it is exciting to see the amount climb every day as the sun rises higher on the horizon with each day of spring, he added. The company's hometown of Sandpoint, Idaho, has applied for a grant to install solar roads and sidewalks, and while more fine-tuning is planned to improve energy harvesting for maximum efficiency, Broussard says it's time to gear up for manufacturing, and he's hired a team of engineers to help streamline the process. To finance its efforts, Solar Roadways is launching a crowdsourcing funding drive through an Indiegogo campaign on April 22nd, Earth Day.
This is Iris Neal. Join us for Job Talks, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
More and more baby boomers are ditching the 9-to-5 and becoming their own boss.
To help make that happen, AARP and the Small Business Administration are matching Encore entrepreneurs with mentors who provide counseling and training. Sheree Gillens with AARP California says starting a small business is a great way for many older Californians to generate income after retirement or to turn a passion into a paycheck.
They bring a lifetime of experience and knowledge gained from their careers. They have savings that they can tap into. So it's a great career option if you're looking to boost your income or create jobs. But what's key is getting connected to the right support and training and mentoring.
A recent AARP survey found 15% of workers between the ages of 45 and 74 are self-employed. Plus, another 13% are planning to start a business once they retire. Gillen says small business owners who get long-term counseling may see bigger sales, hire more workers, and their businesses have more longevity. Gillen says older business owners are a growing trend, with an estimated 7.4 million self-employed Americans over age 50. She says nearly 200 people attended an Encore Entrepreneur Mentoring event this past weekend in Whittier.
They learned about everything from starting and managing your own business to getting capital to using technology that you can use to process transactions. They also heard about the importance of social media because without it, you're invisible.
Gillen says Californians looking to start their own business can find more information and resources online at aarp.org/startabusiness. For Public News Service, I'm Lori Abbott.
CAL FIRE and the federal government have not released reports on the official cause of the Chariot Fire, which scorched over 7,000 acres and destroyed more than 100 buildings on Mount Laguna last year, including a historic lodge and the century-old Al Barr Shrine Camp. Now, John Fisk, an attorney who represents fire victims, says he has filed a claim against the U.S. Bureau of Land Management. Fisk told 10 News, "We've hired experts and we've done an investigation." He said the results indicate that a Jeep owned by the BLM and driven by a BLM driver started the fire in the desert, which swiftly engulfed Mount Laguna. Fisk said that if officials don't respond to his claim soon, he will file a lawsuit against the federal government. The BLM and CAL FIRE did not respond to requests for comment, 10 News reported. Cabin owners at the Al Barr Shrine Camp have not been able to rebuild. Every cabin was filled with memories, Don Wireman with the camp reflected, and every cabin is gone. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
This is a public service announcement for the County of San Diego. Poll workers are needed for the June 3rd primary election, especially people who are bilingual in 8 specific languages. The San Diego County Registrar's Office is required by federal law to provide bilingual speakers and voting materials to voters who speak Spanish, Filipino, Vietnamese, and Chinese. A recent survey by the University of California, Berkeley also showed a need for speakers of Khmer, Japanese, Korean, and Hindi at about 20 precincts, so the Registrar's Office is also recruiting poll workers bilingual in those languages for the June 3rd election. To become a poll worker, applicants must be a U.S. citizen and registered to vote in California, or lawfully admitted for permanent residence in the United States. Poll workers must have transportation to their assigned polling location and will also need access to the Internet to take an online training and attend a 2-hour class. All poll workers receive a stipend ranging from $75 to $175, depending on the assignment, and those who are bilingual receive an additional $15 if they're assigned to provide language assistance to voters. Prospective poll workers can apply online at sdvote.com. For more information, call 858-565-5800 or email pollworker@sdcounty.ca.gov. That's P-O-L-L, worker. Please note the Registrar of Voters Office has moved and the new address is at 5600 Overland Avenue in San Diego. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today we're interviewing Paul DeLancey, author of comedic books entitled We're French and You're Not, The Fur West, Beneficial Murders, and a comedic cookbook called Eat Me.
My guest, an economist by trade, also writes a humorous blog called Lords of Fun. And he describes himself as dividing his time between being awake and asleep. Welcome, Paul. It's a pleasure having you in our program.
Thank you for having me.
Paul, let's begin with the obvious. Why comedy, especially in a cookbook? I mean, how did you segue from writing treatises on economics to irreverent books that poke fun at everyone, including at yourself?
I think I've always been wired that way, to think in humorous terms. Also, a lot of times life isn't always so funny, so you laugh or you cry.
Right.
But I also think for cookbooks, it's tough to really read a cookbook from cover to cover. They're not really page turners. So I'm trying to make it interesting, and in doing so, I hope that people will actually read more of the recipes than just one at a time.
Yes, that's true. Cookbooks are not usually page turners, and we will be reading an excerpt from that in a moment. But local award-winning author Ken Culkin, for example, says of your other book, We're French and You're Not, that, quote, not only does Paul Delancey keep us laughing, but he makes us cheer for scoundrels. Tell us something about cheering for scoundrels, how you make that happen in your novels.
I like to make all my characters, at least in some way, sympathetic or you can relate to them. I'm not a big fan of comedies where they just make fun of someone being stupid. I like them to be real people. And in my first book, We're French and You're Not, they're doing all sorts of things to people. They're blowing up things. They're hitting people in the nose all the time. But the way I make them at least likable is they're oblivious to the effects they do on other people. They think they're good people, and they're trying to actually help people. They'll say, why don't other people do as we do? Then they'll be happy.
Well, in some way, that's realistic. I know people do believe that they're doing the right thing, even when they don't do the right thing.
Right. And also, I think of them as doing things I would like to do, but I can't get away with. For example, you're in the traffic jam, and you want to murder someone, well, you can't. Law enforcement frowns on it.
Right.
But it'd be fun to do it in a book, and then I try to make that as funny as possible. So people can relate to these things, and they can relate to the urges that these people have.
Right.
But of course, you can't do it, and I think that's enormously liberating.
Where do you get your inspiration for the tidbits? Let's go back to your cookbook. The tidbits in your cookbook. I mean, I see what you do is you have your recipes, and they're international recipes, and then at the end of each recipe, you have these very unusual tidbits. Let me give an example. Here's a brief excerpt from the notations at the bottom of a recipe for Mexican tres leche cake. And your notations say, doesn't evaporated milk sound as if there should be no milk left? Well, because it's all evaporated milk. Condensed milk also seems like it should be hard to make. If you were to try condensing a carton of milk with, say, a sledgehammer, you'd most likely get milk flying all over the kitchen. Then you'd have to clean up all that milk from the walls. And goodness sakes, you'd be in big trouble if you shattered your sweetheart's Ming Dynasty vase on your backswing with that sledgehammer. Best leave condensing milk to the condensed milk manufacturers. Let them work their magic. Where do you get your ideas for these kinds of tidbits at the end of your recipes?
I look up weird facts about celery, for example, or celery seed, and they'll say the Romans thought it was an aphrodisiac, and I can use that. I'll look up something like carrots, for example, and they'll say completely boring stuff. Then I have to just plain make it up. I'll just start with an idea and run with it.
One last question, Paul. What's next? And share a little bit about your writing routine.
Well, next, I just came out with a book called Beneficial Murders, where a man's trying to improve the world by killing off annoying people, which is a good thing because Santa Claus is very upset. He hates dealing with all the annoying people when he's delivering every Christmas, and he wants to nuke the world. And so he will stop nuking the world if the hero, Sam Mollusk, can kill 30 bad people by Christmas.
And I know that it sounds dark, but you make fun of everything in the same kind of wordy romp. It's a romp with words and rhythms, and so it comes out light. How do you do that?
Well, I think everything has a humorous side to it. And I also like to make fun of everything equally, so I'm not picking on anybody in particular.
Right. Our time is up, but thank you, Paul, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
For more information on Paul DeLancey and his work, please visit his website at www.pauldelancey.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
Today we're going to introduce you to Terry and Michael, and they are the owners of the Ramona Ranch Winery. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
Tell me a little bit about yourselves.
Well, Mike and I are both from a small town on the Oregon coast. Ramona appealed to us because of its rural nature, open spaces, and the opportunity to have horses and farm, all of which we're lucky to do.
Well, it's beautiful up here, I can tell you that much. How did you guys actually get started?
Well, we moved up to Ramona in 2004, and in 2005 we saw an invitation to attend a meeting of the Ramona Valley Vineyard Association. These meetings were held in people's homes, and we went, met a great group of people, and decided that it seemed like something we were interested in. We were invited to come and help out at harvest, and we were hooked.
Nice. And you started making your first wines that year? How did that work?
Well, we were paid for our labor, so to say, with 100 pounds of Syrah grapes. And we made our first batch of wine that year in 06. And then we installed our first vineyard later that year and have been just growing each year, getting a little more and more entrenched into the wine business.
More and more.
And Michael, you have your own vineyard installation business now. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. I started that recently, and I'm just trying to grow the region, the Ramona Valley area, and got a lot of people interested in planting grapes, and just want to grow the region to make some great wine.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful growing environment up here. I understand that the Ramona Valley has its own AVA, which for our fans and listeners means American Viticulture Area. What's so special about Ramona?
Well, Ramona is unique, and I think when people drive up the hill to Ramona, they're surprised by the rocky outscapes. Mm-hmm. It almost looks like we're on another planet, and some people have told me it looks like the south of France. So it's ideal for growing grapes. Grapes were grown in San Diego County before Prohibition. It was a huge grape area. And grapes like the same things we do. They like hot days, cool evenings, a little breeze. So you add in Ramona's rocky soil, our south-facing slopes, and you have perfect growing conditions, which made us unique and recognized as an AVA.
I also understand that Ramona Ranch is also the co-owners of one of my favorite new little magazines, the Ramona Valley Wine Region magazine. When did this get launched?
That got launched like many great things, sitting around the table one Friday evening with a bunch of friends, drinking some good local wines,
and
we thought somebody needed to tell the story, so why not us as insiders and really starting out? We thought, well, let's do it. So we launched the magazine in 2011.
It's a good one too, folks.
Thanks. Our goal is to educate both the consumer and our growing trade. Mm-hmm. Ramona is a fairly new wine region. There's around 81 vineyards in Ramona right now.
Wow.
Like Mike said, more and more going in all the time. So we thought, well, there's a story here to tell. So we partnered with our friend Dave Billick, who has 30 years of publishing experience. And actually, the magazine was his idea. And we said, you know, you bring the publishing experience, we'll bring the vineyard and winery experience, and we're off and running. It's free online. It has the most up-to-date map of our region, with 21 tasting rooms now up in and around Ramona.
So what's the email address to that so people can check it out?
Yeah, it's free online. It's www.ramonavalleywineregion.com. And I encourage your listeners to check it out and let us know what they think.
With the new micro-vineyard boutique winery ordinance passing, what can your guests expect, you know, when they come out to see you guys?
They can expect to meet the winemakers, the owners. And the joke around here is that Napa spills more wine than Ramona makes in a year. So it's very small, intimate.
So we also make extremely limited quantities. So usually only one barrel of each varietal. So when it's gone, it's gone. For our listeners, that's 24 cases of wine. So very small production.
Very nice.
And I use the analogy that boutique or artisan wines are similar to artisan breads that you might pick up at the farmer's market. Every batch is completely different. It's unique. It's made by hand. It's not mass produced. We don't use any machines in the making of our wines. So from the planting of the vines to the harvest and winemaking, we do everything by hand with extreme care to the quality. Great example is at our last harvest, we sorted 5,000 pounds of Sangiovese by hand, removing every shot berry or unripe berry, stems, leaves. We call it MOG, material other than grapes. You don't really want that in your wine at fermentation, and we're small enough to be able to sort through and pick every single one of those out.
Well, that's an awful lot of work for just two of you.
We round up all of our friends and we turned it into a party. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, life's a party at the vineyard for sure. One last question before we close here. Where can our listeners come to experience your wines?
We're open on Saturdays from noon to sunset, and details are available at the Ramona Valley Wine Region magazine or on our website, ramonaranch.net. We also are open on the occasional Sunday, although Mike and I still have full-time jobs during the week, so we try and take Sundays off, but we will open up on occasion or for private parties or by appointment. So I invite anyone who's interested in wine and the experience to take the time to come up to Ramona Valley. Again, there are currently 21 tasting rooms, and any one of us that you stop in can help you plan a special day in the country. And we're really just 35 minutes up the hill from San Diego.
It's beautiful up here. Come up and visit our good friends up in Ramona and come and visit the wine region. Thanks so much for your time today. Hope everybody enjoyed meeting Michael and Terry.
Thanks, Greg, for coming up. We appreciate it.
You've been listening to Vines and Wines with Greg Maness, proprietor of the Maness Vineyards Estate. Visit the website at manisvineyards.com.
And Amera Media Production.
Hundreds are expected for the annual lawnmower trade-in event at Qualcomm Stadium. You can turn in your old polluting gas-powered mower for a new rechargeable electric one. The cost is $99. You'll get a brand new electric mower worth close to $400.
This is something simple that most families can do. And the nice thing about it, you know, they're easy to start up. They're easy to recharge. No cords to drag around the yard. It's really convenient. And I have people stopping me all the time that have traded theirs in maybe 10 years ago and still say this is one of the best deals they ever got.
If we sell 500 or 600 mowers, that's many, many hundreds of pounds of emissions reduced every year that mower is in service. It helps clean up the San Diego County air, and it makes it healthier for everyone to breathe.
The event starts at 8, but there's usually a line, so you're advised to get there early. More than 600 mowers will be available. In the County News Center, I'm Michael Russo.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.